You have a solo album coming out soon.
Yeah, sometime. We'll get around to doing it. No, I do have one coming. It'll probably be out, it'll be out definitely before Christmas.
Who's on it? What kind of, who wrote the material?
Well, it's, I can't really say right now.
Do you have any other writing done or anything?
I have some of it done, several cuts.
When do you expect to do any recording?
Well, as soon as this tour is over, I'll go back in and finish it. It'll take about 6 weeks.
How long is the tour? When's it going to, what's it run to, the tour? What's the tour run to? How long is it going to be?
Well, somewhere in, I guess, the first week or so of August.
Yeah. August 4th.
Yeah. Are there any other solo projects going on within the group?
Solo, you can't hear.
That's it.
I don't know. Is anybody been?
Some of the releases I've seen on yours identify you as Blues Brother guitarist Steve Cropper. Do you ever feel any resentment or any other emotions over being identified strictly from that, in spite of the law?
Not me. I'll get it from anywhere I can get it. It doesn't really matter, you know. I've been pretty successful for the last 20 years, so it's not like, you know, it's not coming from that one direction. It's whatever I'm doing. At one time, it was Booker T and the MGs, and, you know, now it's the Blues Brothers. That's great.
One last thing.
It's the best band in the world. You kidding?
You think it's the best band in the world?
Of its type, I think it is.
We can kick just about everybody's ass, because we're on their records, too.
you've got a group of learned, born session players that have done nothing really but, I mean, we'll do gigs and all, but have really done music records, you know, backup records. All their lives, and
it's a bunch of arrogant money.
And seldom are you able to get a band like that out on the road or together to do an album. You know, it just doesn't happen too often.
How big is the tour anyway? How many cities?
One. Like, you know, Bill, it's like, well, it started at 15 and they added some dates. I don't know, so it's about
the number of dates altogether.
About 20.
Yeah, it's about 20 dates. So there's 7 shows straight in Los Angeles alone. So, and there's 2 in Detroit, there's 2 in New York, 2 in Chicago, Philadelphia.
I'm Cleveland. Sure you can pick up an attendance somewhere in the next few days if you need it.
Are you going to be doing any tour individually after your solo album, do you expect?
Well, I plan on doing some. I don't know to what extent yet, but we're definitely going to plan on doing something.
You are planning on using the horns.
I am definitely planning on using the horns. I would like to take the same band if we can do that.
Yeah, how much
maybe John and Daniel come along the same background. That would be
how much of the band is going to be on your album?
As much as I can get. I don't really know right now, but Duck and Willie are definitely, we've already cut some tracks and stuff. And I'm sure the horns will oblige me by playing on some others. So.
I'm personally curious about your first exposure to the blues and why you guys decided to go into the kind of music you did when it wasn't exactly, you know, I don't know, what was popular at that time? I don't know. The Twist with Chubby Checker, I guess, was big then. But why did you... Huh?
Let's say Hank Ballard.
Okay. Yeah, what? All right.
Well, the roots are there, but everybody here is very versatile in all areas of music. It's not just, you know, not just blues. This happens to be one that we picked right now to be doing, which is basically R&B and blues roots. But these guys are some of the greatest jazz musicians in the world, you know, so.
Okay. Well, like, you talk about the Memphis sound. For example, what is the Memphis sound? I mean, how did
that's the sound of those?
Where did it go?
People that were in Memphis at that time. The sound is people. It doesn't matter. It's, I mean, they may happen to be in one place or another. I think that something you're the product of everything you hear and listen to and see musically from the time that you first hear it, which is in the womb, I suppose. If you're old ladies sitting around listening to opera when you're still in there, you know, it's like you hear all these and then you seek out the music that you like the most. But if you're a player and you're really serious about music, then you pretty soon start realizing that there's a lot of other kind of great music than the kind that you may be specifically interested in. So you start listening to all kinds of other music, and the blues is sort of the heart of American music anyway. If you can't play the blues, you're missing, I think. It's sort of the center. It's the way jazz players feel. It's the way blues players feel.
What is it about the blues that's so special?
It's the most democratic.
Don't you think?
It's every guy can say exactly what he wants to say and the way he wants to say it. and it's within a prescribed kind of form that everybody's familiar with, so you have this sort of spine or skeleton to work on, and within that there's room for every individual to be so identifiable within that context that the moment you hear him play, like, for instance, most players that I know can listen to a record and within a couple notes be able to identify, say that's John Coltrane, or that's Charlie Parker, or that's B.B. King, or that's Jimi Hendrix, like instantly, because the sound is so personal. And the reason it's so personal is because the players are free to express themselves and with the assurance that everybody else is listening and they're accepted within that band. You know, it's giving is what it's about.
You talk about the freedom to
simplify that.
Okay. Huh?
Run it out one more time.
I like the Buddha. pretty lyrics.
That's well put.
Run it out one more
time. This is for FM.
Yeah, it's cool. We'll beep all the words that we can't say. But you talk about the freedom to express yourself, and I believe the blues started in. With the blacks, do you think that this was their way of, you know, when they were oppressed, to be able to come out and say what they
work?
Our work?
The blues started about 5,600 years ago in
Egypt.
I guess so.
And on many other places.
And I think the blues is universal. I mean, you know, if you held on to the fact that, well, blues is American black music, and that means that a Japanese cat who listens to the blues all his life and comes over here and starts playing and knocks everybody off is somehow not a blues player. The blues is about being alive to feeling, I think, and open to other people. And the fact that, I mean, everybody has the blues. Some people got it worse since, at particular times in history, it's particular people's turn in the historical barrel. But
I don't have my dad back now.
Get the blues. I mean, really, though, it's like that would be saying there's no hope. You know, yeah. If you say that somebody else can't feel it and get with you, then you're canceling on the human race. You know, might as well drop that fucking bomb right now.
Yeah, that's right. I also say hooray for Charlie Pride.
Yes, because that took some balls.
Right, exactly. Well, that's enough said about that. Sure. You know, one thing, well, you know, that's right,
it's
enough said about that.
It's definitely blues for sort.
Yeah, country and western beer drinking music is the white people.
Oh, right,
Beethoven's quartet and C-sharp minor is the blues.
Yeah.
See, Charlie Pride didn't make it because he's pulling somebody's leg. He makes it because he's
that's
that
right.
Good
that's
what he's
good.
Doing.
Wow.
He's singing from the heart and feeling, and he's convincing, and that's why he made it.
Right.
That's what the blues is all about. Right. It's not just catered to ethnic groups and this, that, and the other. It's
be real.
Somehow people think that the upper echelon should listen to symphony music and not belittle themselves down to blues, but I think they're sadly wrong. We've proven it over and over and over again in selling millions and millions of records since, you know, the 50s. So.
There was an interesting scene in the movie where you guys go in and you're supposed to be the Blues Brothers and you find yourself in a C&W bar.
That's right.
Talk about that. That I thought that was brilliant, and then breaking into Stand By Your Man.
All right. Well, I think shows you the versatility of the group.
That's right.
or the balls, one or the other.
Say,
that's our music, you know. We didn't pipe that in. We played it.
I think it proves one thing. I think we're all here collectively are entertainers. And that was what was in the script, and so that's what we did. It's that simple. You do what's at hand, you know, you do what you're asked to do.
Have you ever been in situations like that where you walk in and it is the totally wrong audience for what you're doing?
Well, that actually, I told Danny about country and western bars in Texas that I never worked in, but guys that I worked with when I went to school and lived down there had worked in bars where there was chicken wire in front of the bandstand because fights were so frequent. And bottles and chairs were being thrown, and they wanted the band to play through those fights, in fact, to sort of turn it up so that they could cool it out and hustle the fighters out quickly and keep keep everybody happy, you know. So in the modified form in which it is in the movie, that's where it came from. All of us have been in those situations. Somebody requests a tune you don't know, and they tell you that if you don't play it, it may be your last notes, you know, so you quickly come up with some brilliant ideas.
I've been threatened too, like that. Sure. Oh, wait, hum a few bars. I'll take it up.
What about the woman who was stalking Jake? That really goes on? Women who are scorned by their blues playing men? Yeah, the curl up and die. That is, I guess,
that's
actual.
That's one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen. I love curl up and die.
Actual Salerno in Chicago, right? Yeah. According to a Chicagoan that I went to the movie with.
I've never been in that situation, but I know musicians that have been on the road where ladies follow them all over the place and will do anything to get to them, whatever it takes, you know. I mean, you must know if you read the papers, there's been so many maternity suits on young rock and roll stars that it's, you know, it's become old hat news, you know. It's just, it happens all the time. They'll do anything.
How do you guys fight them?
How do we what?
Excuse fight me? Them off.
How do we fight them off?
Who said fighting. We fight them off, man?
We're not fighting.
We got a net.
That just goes with success, I think, you know? You're going to have fans no matter where you go if
that's
you're
right.
successful.
The guy who builds the best ping pong ball has ping pong groups.
More power to him.
Build a one ring.
I just want him to buy records, that's what I want.
Do you have any plans in the works for the next Blues Brothers album yet?
For the next album?
That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing in town now, is rehearsing for the tour, and there will be a new album come out of that.
That'll be a live album?
There will
yeah.
be a live recorded yeah. album with yeah. all new material, yes.
We're going to burn them down.
Yes.
And when we have picked, well, I say we, somebody picked some great tunes to do. It's been fun the last few days.
When that sounds great.
It's going to be
that
good.
Sounds great.
It'll be recorded at the amphitheater.
Well, the other one.
Just like the first album.
Will lightning strike twice?
How did Sam... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
When do you suppose that'll be out?
Oh, I don't know. Paul?
Any idea?
Paul!
It's supposed to be accepted by
the It'll be out before Christmas.
Well,
they're
shooting from before Christmas.
Late fall or early winter this year.
All right.
It
should be fantastic. It should be better than the other two albums.
That's why do you say that?
What?
Why do you say that?
Well, just based on the energy we heard at the rehearsals, it's amazing. I mean, just the rhythm section has been getting the tunes together now, and Duck Dunn has been sounding so fantastic. He is one bad mother. The band really sounds fantastic. Even though I'm in it.
There's some blues, typical blues style. Blues Brothers style stuff going on. The original drummer, Steve Jordan, who because of other engagements wasn't able to make the movie, is back playing. We gave him a chance to come back and join Willie Hall. So now we have two great drummers instead of just one. And I mean, just one was pretty good. Now we have two. And Murphy Dunn is playing with us, as well as Paul Schaefer, who came back. Paul also wasn't able to do the movie. So sort of a rejoining and expanding band, and bringing the other cats back was the blues thing to do. So it was, it feels really, man. Don't you think so?
blues thing to do.
You write these down.
Can we have a copy of this?
Yeah, really. Isn't the interview going great? Oh, I mean, isn't this fun?
Oh, yeah, having a good time.
You know, really? You should put your clothes back on, though.
Yeah. Oh my God! When you put yours on, I'll put mine on. All right. Oh, heck. I guess... okay, question.
Yes.
I guess the first song that came out from the Blues Brothers was Soul Man, right? Yeah. How did Sam and Dave feel about hearing their song done by these two turkeys that they probably hadn't even much...
Damn, gotta be kidding me.
Are you kidding me?
After what was their last statement?
No, what did they think of these two guys from Saturday Night Live coming on with the song? And it sounds like almost exactly
as
like
I,
the same one.
As I hear it told, mm-hmm. After the record had gone, whatever it had gone, few platinum and you name it. When Sam and Dave appeared at the Bottom Line here, there was a whole lot of hugging going on backstage when John and Dan went down to see them. So I think they're quite proud of it. Not, you know. How they felt initially, I don't know, wasn't there. But after it's all said and done.
How did you feel doing his song again?
Huh?
How about you being on both?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. Isn't that great to do it twice? Especially with your compadres and stuff. So it was great. I think we made just as good a record as the first one. You know, as far as the feel, the arrangement, whatever. I mean, it's everybody's personal taste as to where Sam and Dave did theirs and where John and Danny did theirs, you see. Two complete entertainers, but I think musically, you know, it's there. It's the same feel. I think that's why it made it.
The way songs get identified with performers to the extent that other performers feel constrained from doing them is sort of like ridiculous thinking that it would be like saying that you couldn't play Mozart. Nobody but the Vienna Philharmonic can play Mozart, and the rest of you cats are going to have to stick to somebody. Get your own in-house composer. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. A song is a song. Yeah, it's a song.
Another thing, they never ask the Rolling Stones about doing tunes for Muddy Waters. How does Muddy Waters feel about Rolling Stones? What kind of junk is that? I mean, you're musicians and you're supposed to play. You know, you hear them.
Well, I'm saying these Blues Brothers didn't come on initially as musicians. They came on initially as a warm-up act for the audience at Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, just a moment now.
I mean, that's what they said.
Yeah, I know, but yet and still, I mean, you might have hidden talents that you don't know anything about. You might be a singer next year. Same difference.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's just he's, you know, just because he's a comic doesn't mean he can't sing. There's a lot of comics that can sing. Check it out.
Oh, sure. But the thing was, I mean, at least the impression that I came away with after first seeing them was that their initial intention was to go on as a goof or as a joke and well, no, be the really Blues Brothers a couple
as
of
a joke.
Comedy
all.
Characters.
I think it came from both Danny and John, and especially John, used to come up in the early years of the show and want to sing with the band. Not only when we were warming up the audience, but any time that we were rehearsing in the studio and there was a moment or two when they could jump up there and start singing, they were doing it. And that grew, the idea to do the Blues Brothers was sort of Danny's madcap idea, I guess. But that just came out of the desire to be up there singing and playing with the musicians on the show. And that has grown from that humble beginning or whatever into what it is, but still it's coming from the same place.
A little story that I believe to be true, but I wasn't there. But Joe Cocker was out at Leon Russell's house one night, and on the tube comes John doing Cocker, and Cocker's sitting in the couch, and he comes on and he says, I don't remember doing that. True story. So who has talent and who doesn't? See?
Boy, that was great. See, the next thing
it took him about 30 seconds to realize it wasn't him. That's, you know, I don't remember doing that. What am I going to turn it up?
That's good.
At the press conference, it came out that someone asked Danny and John, weren't you thrilled to be working with these guys? I mean, wasn't it great? And I think Landis said, no, it was really funny because, you know, the people that were supposed to be thrilled by the other people were thrilled to be working on a movie set kind of thing. Boy, we get to work with Belushi and Aykroyd. Was there any of that? It was like people so busy being thrilled over working with everybody else kind of thing?
It was probably a tremendous thrill for them to work with us.
Everybody seemed to have a good time.
Hang out with us musicians, you'll learn something.
I mean, were you thrilled to be working with Belushi and Aykroyd, or was
most
it just another gig?
In the crew, it's
very nice.
Our music fans, and they loved it. And several times when we weren't rolling stuff, we would just play some songs and kind of entertain everybody, and they all got off on that. They thought that was great, you know. Yeah. So we had compliment after compliment about how much fun it was for them to work on a project where they had a really good band and stuff.
Besides, Belushi gets enough star tripping from everybody else, it's our duty to continually reduce him to rubble, which we do. Keep things in perspective.
What about a sequel to the Blues Brothers movie? Have they approached you? It's going to be kind of tough to do it without you, you know.
There have been some stories about Danny having these ideas, but I don't know if anything has been finalized. I don't know if there's any negotiations. I guess that'll just happen in time.
There was a talk in the band. Someone suggested the Blues Brothers meet Marilyn Chambers, but I don't know. The Green Blues.
Deep Blues.
Deep Blues.
That's a good name for an album.
It is.
Did any of you do any professional acting before?
I did some professional acting before.
Yeah. Lots.
Who is this? Lots of professional acting.
Identify yourself. Oh. This is Murphy Dunn.
Doggy Doctor.
And I was... Thank you, Steve.
No. Murphy, too small.
Everyone has a reputation in this room. Tom Bones Malone, Steve the Colonel Cropper,
yes.
Donald Duck Dunn, Willie Too Big Hall, and Murphy Too Small Dunn. But I've done some other movies, High Anxiety and The Big Bus and The Silent Movie. And
what's the one you just finished? You're still working on?
Oh, Honky Tonk Freeway, John Schlesinger film. So,
all right.
I act. Ex-silly.
See what your guests are asking a question?
Were you in Second City?
Yes, that's where I met the gruesome twosome.
Was anybody else nervous about acting for the first time?
I was. Oh.
Well, we had to be ourselves.
So no matter what we did, we were right.
It's an unusual situation when everybody gets to play themselves, be, you know, in a film under their own name, doing themselves, which is a lot of times when you do that, you really don't get much credit for it, or you're just sort of behind the scenes, and they kind of put us up front a little bit, which is great. And it's different than playing character parts and stuff like that, you know. So I don't know, I wasn't scared, but maybe somebody else was.
Relaxed. You all seem comfortable, smooth.
It's, to me, it's not any different than television or entertaining on stage and all that. And it's, I lost those butterflies. I mean, everybody has butterflies when they say, here they are, ladies and gentlemen, for the first 2 minutes, no matter what you're doing. But as far as any anxieties about this and that and the other, I mean, we've been on stage for 20-something years. Some of us have been on stage.
The nature of the movie thing is that it's so fragmented and you do it over and over so many times that you can't really concentrate on, you can't work up nervousness anyway, you know. It's a, by the time they do take 23, right, you can be nervous anyway.
I got to give John and Danny a lot of credit for that. They made us relaxed.
It's true.
So did Landis.
They really made it easy for us. I mean, there was no big hurdles to
don't
jump.
Don't worry about it.
Drugs, right?
No. Well, there's also Landis's attitude, which is very relaxed. I mean, he's kidding around and goosing people and throwing breakable bottles at everyone. So he's just got it's like kindergarten with him. There's no pressure. And a lot of directors, you'll look at them and they'll look away from you. But he's right with you, kidding around, telling jokes and things. So he made everybody feel very relaxed.
How about with John and Dan? How did they do that?
They got scared to death. We had to cool them out a lot. First few shots of each scene, you could see like Danny and John just white as a sheet. So the cats bring him into the Winnebago, we talk him down. We go over the script a few times, and everything gets fine. It's very relaxed.
Play some cards.
Yeah, just play some cards. Talking about it. Oh, you can do it. Don't you remember? Saturday night show, you did it. Same thing happened on the show. And then I hang out with the guys in the band and we cool them out. Just went over the script a few times, read the lines, doing back and forth. Landis was always relaxed and we had to get him on top of things. And we had to get him on. Very nice. Mars? What? Hi, baby.
Besides the fame and the money, what's different between being a session musician and being in a band? Anything really strikes you, really?
Well, I think saying being a session musician is like, we're not, I'm not a session musician. I never considered myself one. I've played in the studio since I was 18 or 19 when I first moved to Dallas, but at the same time, I mean, I've played everything from orchestras to polka bands, bar mitzvahs, and Nancy Wilson. I mean, you know, we've all played for everybody that you can play for. So at this point, it's like, it's all just music. You go in, you call yourself a musician, so when you pick up your horn to play, it doesn't matter where you're playing or what context it is, you play the best you can play. If you're involved with sheer lunacy, you still try to make the best of it. And when the gig is over, you give yourself to that music and that time. If you're, you know, somebody says, okay, I'm paying you this much to do this, you got the option. If you choose to do it, then when you go do it, you do the hell out of it.
Nancy or Jackie West?
Well, Nancy, but Jackie too.
But like with the band, I mean, you're all playing together so frequently and so much. I mean, you learn each other, you bounce off of each other, you work with each other, you develop
well,
each
we're
other.
We're not really playing with each other so much.
We really are.
No.
You can't believe how good we are.
I mean, we're getting back together basically to play the first time since last June.
Yeah, or July.
July when we made the soundtrack. In the movie, we were all there, but it was mainly, we were just pantomiming to what we'd already done. There was not much live stuff done in the movie. And so we're just getting back together again, which is great.
Sounds good, too.
You're not kidding. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I think everybody in the band is real proud of what happens when we do get together. And so every time we do get together, it's like a reunion. Everybody's real happy about it. And there hadn't been a chance for us to get bored with anything that we're doing at all, which I don't think these guys would anyway.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you feel any particular affinity for bands like the new one now, Ronin, that's put together with Waddy Wachtel and Dan Dugmore? And,
still that Rick Marotta, is
it? Yeah, I think you should let Murphy talk about
it. Yeah.
I'm not a studio musician, but I have a particular affinity to that band because most of the guys are my friends and I have a tune on the album as a writer. But I like the band, and I think that a lot of people say that studio musicians can play nothing but sterile music, and I think that's ridiculous.
I think Toto proved that.
Same thing with Born in a Recession.
It's like the Atlanta Rhythm Section, you know, they've done sessions for a long time.
Well, you know, you look at the way it works. You go into a studio, they put down music in front of you. You've got 3 hours to do two or three tunes. And in that time, you may spend half the time trying to get a good headphone mix. The producer or the writer of the horn charts, for instance, if it's a horn overdub session, may not have the right things for you to play, or maybe someone limited in his understanding of what you're really trying to do. There's a million things that enter into it. When you think of the way most bands play and the way most musicians like to play, which is to be rehearsed and to know what you're playing and to feel comfortable with one another doing it and to have done it enough times so that it's sort of locked in more in a physical way than just having to do this immediate thing, it's a wonder that the music sounds as good as it does. I think it's a tribute to the sort of, there's a pride in being able to sit down and look at a piece of music and play it with the right feeling and together and listening to one another and putting it in the slot that the rhythm section has it in, even if it might be the wrong slot, right away. And that's, you know, so if it's sterile, there's a lot of other things that come to do it. I don't think it's so sterile anyway.
That's right.
We're at the ass end of the thing, you know.
The thing that keeps it from being sterile is that everybody in this band, and there are a few other bands out there that do the same thing, is everybody plays to support everybody else, you know? Everybody's their own individual, but when they're playing, they all play together as a team. You know, that's what makes a good band, is teamwork. And that's what happens in this group. Except for Ruben, he's...
the lovely part about this band, everybody's on the same level.
The beautiful test,
nobody
is the tank.
Sorry, no, hey.
Turkeys. Keeping it right down to turkeys.
Everyone's been trying to imagine what it's like touring with you guys.
Luna dumped his lips, though.
On the road with you.
And Cropper dumped to you. Cropper dumped to you for an hour. If you know something about it, he dumped to you for six.
I just have one more thing. I'd like each of you to answer it individually. I'm building up a file for my program.
And he wants all of you to do messages for his answer phone.
No, I want one of those.
Hello, this is Billy Graham. I am some in the city.
Leave us a message, eh?
No, what I want is
Alamo Springs.
It's all right. Jordan, if each of you would just again identify yourselves, tell me what your birthday is, and what kind of things you appreciate in a gift.
Oh my God!
Or a gift
can
that you
I get
got
on
that
this
was
list
really
too?
Good, or
Bill? Can or, I? Can I identify
yeah,
my?
Yeah, I won't play yours. But I'd like to do that if possible.
Things you appreciate in a gift.
Yeah, or something that you've gotten that you really liked one time, or something you'd really like to get,
or gotten rid of.
Listen, in December and January and February, when nobody's on tour, I'm hurting for people I can put on the program. So this way I can build up.
So this is sort of filler.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. It's a reasonable question. Anybody want to start?
I'll take it. My mind's pretty made up here. Alan Rubin, I'm the trumpet player in the band. I was born February 11th.
When?
1943. I'm old. And I like things made out of platinum. Gold, or I like diamonds. I like diamond things. I like expensive, real expensive, well thought out gifts that take months and months to find. Okay, next.
And
finance, yeah.
I'll go.
I'm a spoiled kid.
Steve Cropper, 10/21/41. Young boy.
Libra?
Libra. But anyway, the man sitting here, but one of the greatest gifts I've ever received, my last birthday, Duck showed up at the house with a guitar case, and I opened it up, and there's a primo, Esquire guitar that I used to play years ago. It was what I started with Booker T and the MGs, all of Green Onions and all those things, which got lost and for whatever reasons. And I had Fender check it out the other day. Duck thought it was a 1961, but they said the way the neck was made, they stopped making that in 1960, so it has to be either 58 or 59. And it's a guitar in the movie, and it's the one I'm playing now, and it's like, that's it. It's the ultimate. I hope I can keep it. Thanks to Mr. Dunn.
This is Murphy Dunn, 12242. A romantic evening with someone I love. That's it for me.
This is Bones Malone, 6/16/47. And I like gifts that are aesthetically pleasing and also have some sort of practical application. Like this is something that John and Danny gave me once, and it's great for like cleaning fingernails and whatever.
As a name.
Not yet.
Not yet. We'll come back.
Blue Lou. May 13, 1945. Mother's Day. Gifts. I don't think about gifts so much. I like the, but I do know what I like. I like something that, I prefer something that someone has made themselves or have done themselves. You know, something of a real personal nature. Doesn't matter. One of my favorite things is the guy upstairs who's a potter made me a funny, funky frog called the Duchess. He's got a diamond ring and a derby hat. Sort of hip-looking frog.
Okay, this is Willie Hall. August 8, 1950.
1950?
Yeah.
We got down 2 weeks today.
I don't know, gifts, I'll accept anything in white. You know, preferably Bolivian or Peruvian. though. I was just kidding. I don't know. I like simple things. Anything, you know, it doesn't matter. Like I say, I don't think it's a gift. Like they say, it's the thought of the gift. So, gifts, period, whatever. A radio. Thank you. Radio, a motorcycle, whatever. Or a motorcycle with a radio.
I'm Duck Dunn, November 24th, 1941. God almighty. Came over on a Mayfly.
He's all dead.
A round trip to Hawaii with everything. Bye.
Matt Murphy, December the 27th, 1929. I came over before the Mayflower. I like diamonds, and I also blue diamonds. I would like that. If anyone is listening.
Gentlemen, thank you all.
You're very welcome.
Lots of great material, man. I'll be using you all year.